WBBM, the Republic Broadcasting Network.
August 29th, 2020. This is Spingola Speaks, and this is Deanna Spingola. As always, I'm broadcasting from the Chicago suburbs, where there's a lot of very, very interesting things going on, not necessarily in the suburbs where I'm at, but downtown. Lots of interesting things. Anyway, I'm very glad that you joined me today at republicbroadcasting.org. I hope that you will also, and I always tell people every week about these two websites. And I really do hope that you will visit them. One of them is SpingolaSpeaks.net, where you will find archives and all kinds of fabulous, fabulous information. And then the other one is ScreamingSandyHook.net, which I created after I wrote my book. And I added a lot of things about the children and about the funerals and details that weren't available in the book. And that, anyway, there's a lot of very interesting things at that website. So I hope that you will visit it. It's ScreeningSandyHook.net. And, of course, if you wish to ask questions or make comments during the program, just email comment@spingola.email. And I don't really look at my other email address during the program, so... And I only open this one on 3 hours a week. So anyway, just email comment or comments at spingola.email. And I invite you to visit our chat room at spingola.chatango.com. And, of course, you know where you can find the archives, which are at spingola.com. Spingola.com, and just click on the radio schedule button on the left, and you can see who I've had on the program in the past and also in the future. Okay, our first guest today is Tracy Malone, and her website is NarcissisticAbuseSupport.com. Tracy, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, it's just really wonderful for you to take the time out and visit us here. I believe that there's a lot of very narcissistic people in our very narcissistic society. And so I'm really glad that you have this support online where people can visit and can get some help. And you also have a book out, or is it's coming out in the near future?
It is coming out. It is in final edits right now, so we're hoping to be out by the beginning of October.
Wow. What is the name of the book?
It is called Divorcing a Narcissist. You Can't Make This Shit Up.
Okay, what is the name of it again?
Divorcing a Narcissist, You Can't Make This Shit
Up. Oh, gosh.
So basically, someone who's going through this understands that title is powerful, because the things that happen there are just so unbelievable that every client comes on my screen and says, "You can't believe what happened, and you can't make this blank up." And so I decided to make the book it. So,
That's a really good title.
Thank you.
Very, very appropriate.
Thank you.
So, as I mentioned, there's a lot of narcissistic people. And what is it that makes some people just a target? Do people have some sort of a sign on their forehead that says, abuse me, I could be a real good narcissistic target?
It feels like that.
Yes.
It totally feels like that. And generally people that have been abused by a narcissist, it becomes something that, you know, particularly in this divorce case, that they have possibly had this sort of behavior around them a lot longer than they knew. Often people discover that they have parents or family members that were narcissistic, and so the behaviors become quite, like, familiar to the victim, and so it's hard for them to see when they get involved in a romantic relationship or even marriage, thinking that this is abnormal behavior. So, you know, victims are targeted for their assets, if you would. Their assets could be that they're kind, loving, wonderful people that are willing to do for others before themselves. So that brings us into the fact that they might be people, again, if you were raised by a narcissist, you might not have learned boundaries. And a narcissistic person is almost doing an interview at that coffee date to find out, like, does this person have boundaries? Can I push them? What have they endured before? They can hear if you're a good candidate to abuse from your story. They'll ask about your family, and if you go, oh my goodness, I have a crazy family, I don't see them anymore. Okay, now they've just learned you're isolated and you're a much better target. You're the weak link in the herd of antelopes running across the field. They can get you because you've been vulnerable before. That makes sense?
Yes, it really, unfortunately, it really does. I've read a lot of books about narcissism. And do you think that narcissists are aware that that is what they're doing? Or do you think it's deliberate? Go ahead.
No, go ahead. Finish your sentence.
I know that if you, for instance, if you have a narcissistic mother, then you're probably going to have a narcissistic husband or two, and even narcissistic friends. It just seems to be a pattern.
Absolutely. So the patterns are built in, and you know, I have friends that have never had any exposure to a narcissist at all. So they just they have better boundaries than I ever had. They could spot it, and they were like, no, that's control. I didn't see it that way as well. Most people who are victims kind of lapse that. The question about the narcissist, whether they know that they're doing this, is really walking a slippery slope, because this spectrum of narcissism can go to someone like to look in the mirror, which is how my therapist described it when I asked them about it. It's like, oh, yeah, they like to look in the mirror. Well, that's, like, not the one that's going to destroy your life, right? That's the bottom of the spectrum, and the upper side is the ones that are purposely and maliciously doing things. And they come in every size, shape, color, sex, everything. They're all over the world. And in the lower, you know, kind of threshold of narcissistic behaviors, many people can be married to them for 25 years until such time that all of a sudden what we call the mask falls. And the mask just, they get a narcissistic injury. Sometimes it's a rejection. Sometimes it's, you know, that you've had a child and now they're not the center of attention. So there's some kind of trigger that turns them into a different person, and you see this other side of them. So they've been sort of covert for all that time until something happens where they figure out they can't control you anymore. And when they can't control you anymore, that's when they really slip into the very, very abusive behaviors. And there are some famous YouTubers out there that are known and diagnosed narcissists. And
oh, really?
The way they profess it, oh, yes. the way they profess it is they know. And there's one on YouTube, I can say his name, H.G. Tudor. He has about 25 books out, and he talks of them as our kind. And if you listen to his YouTube, it's particularly creepy to hear him say, well, when you do this, I already know I'm doing that. This is how our people think. This is well, you know, it makes it a lot more scary. Most victims can hardly listen to many of his things, but the insight that we get about whether they know what they're doing is invaluable. So for that, I can tolerate listening to some of his videos because I've learned really the inside of their mind through that. And, you know, others have the train of thought that, people with narcissistic personality disorder had an injury usually, you know, before they were 3 or at least before they were 6 where they felt abandoned, where they had this injury that made them turn to this sort of dark side where they were going to protect themselves no matter what the cost. And so they become, you know, very controlling, very demanding. And we see this even in little children. It doesn't mean they're on their way to narcissism, but when they have no empathy, when they're not able to care what others think, that's where they really cross the line. So, you know, and so therefore the people that are on that train of thought, and I'm not saying that's not how they became a narcissistic person, but they have compassion for them that they are just mentally ill and incapable of the human emotion of empathy.
Wow. Have you been the victim of a narcissist?
Yeah. That is how my work started. I knew nothing about narcissists other than maybe they look like to look in the mirror, but I was married to one, divorced one, and then I dated one. And I still didn't know it, even though my horrific divorce was called the most tortured in our town's history. No one ever said that word to me. No one said, look this up. So I dated a man after my divorce. And after he did something horrific, friends told me to go look up gaslighting. Go look it up. He's gaslighting you. And that led me down the rabbit hole of narcissists, which led me down to why me? Which led me to my mother. Oh my gosh, my sisters. Oh my gosh, my aunt. I have friends. Oh my goodness, my whole world imploded. It explained my divorce. It explained so many pieces. And then I had to do the work to figure out, you know, why me? How do I get out of this? But this is the journey of most survivors, is that they often find out it's not just the one person. I missed it with my husband. I missed it with his family because I was used to the behavior. In fact, I tell people that the silent treatment was my family's, like, vacation. Like, we just were so used to getting, like, ghosted and silent treatment that it was just normal and part of life. So I didn't know that that was really a very bad tactic that people were doing to me. So that helped.
Wow. I have a question in the chat room, from the chat room. Could narcissism be a symptom of a greater condition, and can a narcissist be reformed?
I'll take the reformed question for 5 points first. people with narcissistic personality disorder, full-on narcissistic personality disorder, when they've got that, they cannot be changed. There is no cure. They can go to therapy. They'll pretend to go to therapy in a marriage situation. But, you know, expecting them to change is like asking someone with, autism and asking them to change. You can't ask someone to change that has one of these things, nor can we change the narcissist. they can want to change. In fact, sometimes there are some that really see that they aren't able to have real relationships. And that's not just a marriage. That's their friends. They're superficial. So they can feel it inside and might want to change. But I have worked with and talked to some of the best psychologists in this field. And they say all the time they have narcissists come in that want to be healed, and they can teach them empathy in the session and make them see that the behavior they were doing was not appropriate. And then they'll go back out on their own, and they'll come back in the next week and say, oh, this is what I did. And they're like, didn't you see that this is what we just talked about? Yeah, but it's different. You know, they just are not capable of changing. What was the first part of the question?
The first part, let me just move the screen here, whether it could be a symptom of a greater condition.
Well, again, narcissistic personality disorder as a formal diagnosis is what it is, right? Narcissistic behaviors on their own, however, are pieces that can be mimicked in other things. If addicts, for example, they can be very selfish. They can be very demanding and very controlling of others. And so they very often display narcissistic behaviors. There's also people who, like myself, and I'll use my sisters as examples. We were raised by the same parents. I became the codependent, people-pleasing, boundary-less girl who just liked to help everybody and surrounded myself with loving people and have them for 50 years now. My sisters, on the other hand, used this tactic, and it was learned behavior from my mother as the way that they were going to go on with their life and to use guilt and control people, however my mother did, right? And so their choice is to go that direction. Now, both of them are addicts as well. So, you know, a narcissistic parent can really put a lot of things on their children. But, you know, having them almost mimic these behaviors is certainly something that, you know, would my sisters qualify right now and take the test and say, oh, yes, you're narcissistic? Or is it something that they've learned? And this is always a concern with parents when, say, one of the partners is the narcissist. And you're divorcing them, and now you're scared because your kids are starting to show the signs. And this is the place where my mother, if she had been, you know, aware of her own behaviors or cognitively, you know, I'm not going to let my children do this or something like that, or even, you know, if my father stepped in and said, hey, you know, this isn't okay, he would have the opportunity to have turned us to see empathy, to teach us that that wasn't okay. But in our case, both my sisters were just fed and almost awarded and rewarded for the fact that they were becoming, you know, very narcissistic. And unfortunately, that was their destiny.
Wow.
Does that answer it?
Yes, I believe so. Now, this is just an example, but I know... No, it's not an example. It's a real life event. It's a real life situation. I know of an individual who is, was an only child of a divorced parent. There were no other children in the family. His, aunt and uncle had no children. He was the center of their attention. The world revolved around this person. Whatever he did, whatever he said was wonderful. Although he had responsibilities, had a job, and did those sort of things, he shot himself in the foot quite a lot because he would come off very sociable and very knowledgeable about a number of things, but when it got right down to it, he didn't have the capability. Okay, we'll be right back in 3 minutes.
Starts with you and me. It starts with you and me. We all can be
Welcome back. This is Deanna, and our guest today, our first guest today is Tracy Malone, and her website is narcissisticabusesupport.com. She has a book coming out. I hope you're taking pre-orders.
Soon we will be.
Good. And the name of your book is? I'll have you say it.
Divorcing a Narcissist, You Can't Make This Shit Up.
I was talking about this narcissist that I know of, knew, and they browbeat other people, especially children. And rhetorically, just to minimize them and to disempower them, I'm not sure why anybody would do this to a child. This is very personal for me. I was married to a narcissist, and it was very interesting. As soon as I got a job, I had to get a job because he'd gone through several professions, and he was running out of rhetoric, getting people to think that he had the ability to do something that he really didn't. And anyway, where was I going? So I got a job. I started making more money than he was making. In fact, he wasn't making too much money at all. And then all of a sudden, he thought it was time for him to move on to somebody else, which turned out to be somebody that he was formerly involved with romantically. Now, we'd been married for quite a long time, and it was a difficult thing, and I didn't realize how I got involved. Is that he came into where I was working, and he just kept talking and talking to me, and he just seemed so nice, and I had a Volkswagen, and apparently one of my taillights was out, and he noticed it, and he said, "Oh, let me take care of this for you. Let me help you." And he, you know, changed the taillight. And gosh, I thought, what a great guy. This is so nice. And it was different than, it was just, he seemed so nice. And, my mother was a narcissist. I asked my dad when I was 14, I said, "Why do you put up with this?" Because I could see, I could tell. He said, "Just to keep peace in the family." So it isn't always the male that's a narcissist.
Oh, no. Mm-mm. No, there's a lot of women, and personally, I think the women are even more dangerous than the men, because they can hide behind the mask. They can, you know... They go off the stereotype. I'm not a narcissist. Those are only men, and it's the women that are doing it. So,
right.
They're dangerous.
I have also had narcissistic friends. I've totally cut ties with anybody that's narcissistic, because I thought, you know, I'm not going to do this anymore.
You have to. That's part of the whole game. Is the reason that, you know, you were attracted to this person, your husband, was because he was so charming. And right off the bat, he showed you this mask of helpful. Like, oh gosh, she has a taillight out. That's my way in. Let me show her how nice I am. And it is conniving. It is to sit there and figure out what your vulnerabilities are and step up and show you how much they can help. And then they win your heart with that charm, and you may or may not see the ugly behaviors until the end. You may have had verbal abuse every single day of your marriage. Sometimes it's that flavor. Other times they don't, they're passive aggressive, and the abuse is more covert. And so it's not as easily picked up. And you say to yourself, well, that's just him or her. That's, you know, they get moody sometimes and it'll be better in a little while. And people like your father stay because they know that the alternative is, if they left you kids alone with her, that the alternative wouldn't have been a good outcome because you would be exposed to her even more. So in his mind, he was keeping the peace, but he was also protecting you guys from being with her more by him being able to be the buffer between you.
Wow. Right. He tried to avoid her too, I think. He read a lot. He always had it. She always said, oh, you've always got your face in a book. And so I learned my love of reading from him. And sometimes I think that I learned a great deal more from him, without realizing it. And, this, you mentioned this no empathy situation. I did write a book about Sandy Hook, which involved, the shooter at Sandy Hook, and he was diagnosed with Asperger's. And one of the symptoms of Asperger's is they have absolutely no empathy, and they're very, very focused on one particular thing or two particular things. And his focus, unfortunately, was on mass shootings. And when you read all of the documentation that's involved with all of the police reports, and there's like 7,000 pages, but that lack of empathy is also very, well, it's associated with Asperger's. And I think that, and you mentioned autism. Or did you?
Mm-hmm. I did. I was not comparing it to that. I was saying if you had a mental problem or, you know, thing like autism, Asperger's definitely has a lot of similarities, as well as sort of sociopath and psychopath and borderline.
Right. There's all those other paths.
Yeah, they're all like overlapping. They're in the personality disorder spectrum of cluster B personality disorders. So they can have a little of this.
I have a copy of the DSM, and I've studied a lot about this when I was writing and just trying to figure out where I'd been and whatnot. But there seems to be more psychopaths and sociopaths in our society than ever before, or is it just that I became more aware of it?
Well, for someone who has seen it, like yourself, it's hard to unsee. It's hard to not, like we have, you know, like Spidey glasses. We have Nike glasses where we see these personality types a lot more clearer. I have interviewed some of the top experts on my YouTube channel and podcast, and I've asked them, could you tell me why? Like, it seems like there's more, because I've only been in this narcissist abuse world for about 4.5 years now. And I can even see from the amount of YouTubers that there were when I started learning to the hundreds and hundreds of them that are there now. The books weren't on the shelves, and now they fill the shelves. And it's not that we need to, that there's more of them. The actual numbers, and the numbers are so skewed, that if you ask every expert that's out there, you know, there's 325 million people in the United States, and they say 6% of them would have narcissistic personality disorder. However, they say that like 153 million are victims of abuse because of this type of abuse. It's one narcissist doesn't just hurt one person. He hurts them at work. He hurts their children. He hurts the wife. He hurts this. She does that. You know, the amount of people that they hurt is far greater than the amount that are out there since they never get tested, and if they do go to a psychiatrist, they're faking it and charming them so that they don't get diagnosed. It's hard to pin down the number, but the number is epic. I coach people in China. I coach people in Singapore and all over the world. And in the other countries of the world, what I hear from my clients is they don't have the books yet. We are going up that route, and we have thousands of books out there that people can read and learn about. But in other countries, even countries like England and Ireland that have coercive control laws, meaning emotional abuse is illegal in those countries, they don't have programs for the victims. They're like, oh, sure. And how are you going to prove it? Oh, yeah, we haven't figured that part out yet. And they also don't have the books. So that's why people in Jordan are calling me up for coaching and help versus them having access to this kind of help. So in many ways, I think you're right. This isn't out, I think we're just at the beginning of this awakening, if you would, as a society. And I think other countries and the rest of the world hasn't had as much luck with getting books and authors and speakers and things like that are going to help educate people.
Right. I remember one of the books that I read after I was divorced. It was Men Who Hate Women, which it was an interesting book, but it wasn't, it was just an interesting book. It didn't answer the questions that I was seeking. And the other thing too that is a very sad thing is that when a child, a child grows up with a narcissistic father, they're more inclined to marry a narcissistic woman so that they feel comfortable. And they're not out looking for a narcissistic woman. It's just, as you say, it's a comfortable feeling. You're comfortable being abused, apparently.
Yeah. Or not even recognizing that it's abuse. You know, tactics like gaslighting. Most people, I did not know what it was. And yet once I learned and studied and now I teach, I just went, oh my goodness, I've been gaslit my whole life. And so when someone is gaslighting you, what that means is that you are, they are trying to convince you that what you think you know or saw is not real. So they're trying to make you feel crazy, right? So if you say, oh, you know, last week you did this, Mom. And then she's like, I never did that. And you end up stop asking. You know that it's just not worth, like your dad gave up, right? He just said, it's just not worth the fight. I know she did that. I know she's lying. It's just not worth it. But gaslighting is so insidious that in addition to the lies, it's making the child, for example, myself, think that there's something wrong with you. How could you not remember that your mother didn't say that last week? But I know she did. But no, but the mom knows best. If she says she didn't do it, it's your brain is flip-flopping, and you get this thing called cognitive dissonance where, like, what's the truth? I know I heard it. I saw it. I even saw you on tape, Mom. You said it at the birthday party. Everyone heard you. No, I didn't. That never happened. My mother was famous for that. My little sister was a drug addict, as I said, and she went to jail, and my parents had to give me the money to go bail her out. They didn't live in the area. And I went to jail, and I bailed my sister out. And to the day my mother died, she will deny my sister ever went to jail.
Wow.
And I was like, Mom, I was there. How could you say this? I was at the police station. And she was just like, nope, that never happened. I mean, was it denial? Or was it, it was gaslighting to me, which made me sit there and fight for her to believe that and remember it my whole life.
Wow. The other thing that I've noticed too is that narcissistic people always blame others for what they do. Like they will explode in anger and then blame you for making them angry.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely. I just had a support group this morning with a bunch of women, and you know, that they're sitting there being blamed for, you're doing this, you're doing that, you know, and it is just a projection and a reflection of what they're doing. But that the damage is done when they've attacked the victim going, you're the thief, you're the one. And that happened during my divorce. I was accused of stealing this and stealing that, and I just kept saying, no, I'm the responsible one. I'm the one that pays the bills. I don't steal anything. Meanwhile, it was a cover because he was stealing all the money, right? But that false allegation put me into a protective mode that I had to defend myself. I'm not a thief. I'm not a thief. And while I was sitting there in the court for my divorce, defending myself against those false allegations, I couldn't actually pull myself together to put the mirror back at him and say, no, you're the one stealing, and here's the proof, right? So they do it to confuse us, and they do it to confuse the victim.
Wow. Wow. Yeah, this gaslighting thing, there was a movie, apparently, that this was all based on.
1940s. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was accused of gaslighting. Somebody accused me of gaslighting them. And this person said, you're gaslighting me because you're talking real low so that I can't hear you. And it turned out that she was going deaf. But, but she's no longer in my life, thank goodness. But yeah. They do a lot of door slamming, screaming, hollering, yelling, mm-hmm. Cussing, right? Does all that
absolutely. Sound? Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And gaslighting is such an important thing, because what I find is like the false thing that someone just accused you of gaslighting them because you were speaking too lowly, right? It's used and it's thrown around, just like the word narcissist is very often thrown around, and it sort of devalues all of the people that are really with these psychopathic, you know, narcissists. Because when people don't understand what gaslighting is and they accuse somebody of it, you know, it's taken away the value of what it does. And the types of things that we hear are, you know, something like, you thought that last time when you were wrong. Don't you remember? Or where did you get an idea like that? I never said that. But you're whining. I'm not going to listen to that tonight. Or you're making that up. I don't remember that at all.
Oh.
Like that example with my mom and my sister at jail. I was at the jail. I remember. You know, but
right.
I sit there for years and years and insist upon it. I put a little part in my book about gaslighting, about something my husband had done. And he had gotten all of these Home Depot gift certificates with all of his airline points when we first met. And he had them. There were like 12 of them in 12 $100 gift cards in an envelope. And he was in charge of the envelope. It was next to his bed. I don't know where it went. But mm-hmm. for 10 years of our marriage, he blamed me because we never found them again. We moved 3 times, and every time we'd move, he'd go, well, maybe now you'll be able to find those Home Depot dollars.
Oh, my gosh.
I would swear on my life that I never touched those things. They were on his side of the bed. I didn't look at them. He lost them. He was the irresponsible one. Yet, for 10 years, I didn't realize that was gaslighting. I ended up being the family joke. If there was something that his family would say, they would be like, oh, she'll probably lose it. Remember the Home Depot dollars?
Oh, my gosh.
I never used that, but it became the brunt of the family joke. And just like your father that gave in and surrendered, I would just go, yes, sure, whatever. Because I got sick of trying to fight. I got sick of saying I was right. I didn't touch them. They weren't hearing me, so I surrendered. And that's when they knew they had the control over me.
Wow. Well, I didn't really understand gaslighting until you just explained it. I've looked it up, and I watched the movie, or I was aware of the movie. But yeah, that explanation is very good.
Yeah, and there's actual patterns, something like withholding, where you know, the abusive partner doesn't want to listen to what you're saying. You know, I don't want to hear this again, or you're trying to confuse me. when you're just trying to, like, state the truth. Countering is when an abusive person, like, questions your memory, like, that never happened, or blocking you and saying things like, you know, is that another crazy idea you got from blank, your friend, you know, trivializing that this is so unimportant and you're making a big thing out of it, or you're too sensitive. Someone calling you too sensitive in the middle of, you know, a discussion when you remember something and they're saying, making it up, that's gaslighting.
Wow. Interesting.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. Sometimes you don't know where you've been until after you've left a situation. And it's difficult to look back and say, okay, what happened? What mm-hmm. what happened? And I do recall that, and it just felt so good because I was always kind of at his beck and call. And I remember we were having this conversation, and he was getting irritated, and I hung up on him, and I thought, wow, that felt good. That was really good. It just felt so like all of a sudden, I was standing up for myself. And it just really did feel very good. Yeah.
And that's where victims need to get. They need to be empowered by learning to set boundaries, which for you is, let's hang up the phone. I don't have to listen to this, right?
Sure.
But victims have so much work to do in recognizing the next one, too. Because
right.
what happens is narcissists come in all sorts of shapes, colors, sizes, as I said. They can be like a malignant narcissist. That's the closest to the sociopath spectrum, where like completely devout of any emotions and more calculating in the methodology in their heads of how to get somebody, if you would. The narcissistic spectrum, again, we can have covert ones. A covert narcissist is a narcissist that you see, he's the soccer coach, she's the Girl Scout mom, they have this public persona that they love
right.
their children, and then they get in the car with the kid that they just played soccer with, and they're abusing them and calling them names and abusing them for, and so, but they get out of the car at the soccer luncheon and they're like, hey, this is my son, I'm so proud of him, when they had just screamed at the kid for missing a goal all the way to the luncheon. They are
secretly like that.
The public face is the narcissistic mask. That's such a common one, that I'm the good parent. I could be the good employee mask. I could be the really helpful neighbor that comes and shovels your driveway. But then I lived with my husband, and we had one of those neighbors that shoveled our driveway when it would snow. And my narcissistic husband, I'd be like, go out there. He's 80. Go out there and help him. No, he wanted to do it. I'm just going to let him do it. And you'd be like, well, wait a second. And then as soon as that neighbor wanted to come over or invited us over, you'd hear my husband be like, oh, God, he's such a user, rah, 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 complaining about them.
Oh, my gosh.
And then to their face, they'd open the door and go, oh, I love you guys. And you're like, wait a second, you were saying how much you hated him. You know, that's the quest. The masks of public is one thing, but behind closed doors, they're completely different. So
wow.
we have to learn all of the different types of masks. For you, you know, when your husband fixed your car, you wore the helpful mask.
Right.
And that's what got you hooked.
excuse me. You mentioned the wonderful parents. And I knew of a young man who was, he was a swimmer. A fabulous swimmer. He was on a swim team and did really, really well. And his parents were very active in the church that they belonged to, and they just looked like perfect parents. But apparently their son was just never quite good enough, and they reminded him of it probably after every swim meet. And I knew the swim coach, and he also mentioned this, that they just really kind of browbeat him. And that poor, poor child, poor young man ended up leaving home early, becoming addicted to drugs. I don't know whatever happened to him, but he was such a nice young man, and didn't deserve to be browbeaten by his parents. And the other thing that you were talking about with empathy, that narcissists don't have any empathy. I lost my daughter on August 8th of 2019. And during the holidays, especially right around Thanksgiving, it was very difficult. The holidays were very difficult because we always put a great deal of effort. Holidays were a big, big thing for us. And so in November, just after Thanksgiving, I was just having a very difficult time. And I mentioned to this friend, I said, I'm just having a really difficult time with Rebecca passing. And she says, oh, you're just overdoing that. It was shot, and she ended up hanging up on me.
Wow. Yeah, I hope she's out of your life now.
she is. She is totally out of my life. I was shocked. I never talked to her again. I blocked her. I never talked to her. Never spoke to her again. Never intend to speak to her again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's the strong part, right? Other kind of victim that doesn't see this coming might be really hurt by that when someone said that to them. And kept that friendship and continued on with the abuse without having the strength like you to just say, you're completely wrong and I don't want you in my life. So kudos to you, and I'm so sorry for your loss, but that person really didn't deserve to be in your life.
Exactly. And I think we just all need to decide who we're going to have in our lives. Okay, we'll be right back in 3 minutes. All righty, thank you so much. We are back, and our first guest today is Tracy Malone. Her website is narcissisticabusesupport.com. She has a book coming out. I hope everyone buys your book. I think everybody knows of a narcissist. But I have a question from the chat room that is very interesting. When the narcissist has gone through unbelievable abuse from the family, loved ones, strangers, and society, and they reach out with love for help and support, is it not the moral, spiritual way, duty of a human to maintain support and work with the soul of a narcissist, or is it just a waste of time?
Well, it depends on how they are in your life, right? It is the human gesture of being kind and doing the right thing, if you would, the loving thing. But when they hurt you, it's not healthy to be there. There are certainly people, and I have friends in my life that have been there for 40 years, and I believe them to be narcissistic, but they aren't hurting me, right? That's the difference. They aren't the ones that are abusing me. And so if you have someone like the caller has put on the chat room there that is safe for you to help them, then do. But be really mindful. Be mindful about giving them money. That can be a very big ploy. I coached at least 3 people this week that were basically conned out of money because of their kindness. They were giving. This person had been in the war and needed help, and it was all a con. And that woman lost, you know, tens of thousands of dollars. So that's the kind of thing. We can help them, but we have to be careful of how we help, because, you know, some of these people that come off, and I'm not saying only narcissists, but they hide behind this mask, is that they are literally there to use people for what they can get from them. So if wow. they're using you for something like money, be really careful of that. You know, marrying them's a completely a different story, but them having the opportunity to, when they, if they hurt you or take from you, you must set boundaries. And if they do not listen to your boundaries, and that means for a boundary like, I will help you to the ends of the earth, but I'm not going to help you with money. Because that actually enables them. That enables them to do less work and more destruction. And it's not always a healthy thing. I helped my sisters with money for years. I was the bank. And I had to learn that that was enabling them. And it was keeping me in that victim state. So there's such a spectrum of how we can do this. They are... you know, they're around us. They're everywhere we are, and we cannot avoid people with this personality disorder. It's when they hurt you or take advantage of you or take advantage of others that you need to draw the line. And just like you did with your friend that made the rude comment about your child, you have to know I can cut this person off without guilt because I know I've tried.
Right.
So many victims stay with their abusers because they think they can help. It doesn't work.
Well, Tracy, thank you so much for being on the program, and I hope that people will visit your website, purchase your book. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
Thank you so much.
Take care. Bye-bye.